Purim Katan.
It is a little bit of Purim. And there's a joke that they say that there was a drunk. And when the month of Adar came, he started getting drunk. So they said to him, "What do you mean? You know, it's not Purim yet." He said, "No, but the Megillah says, V'achodesh asherneh pach lahem miyagon l'simcha. The whole month that changed for them from sadness to joy. So, ain't simcha el biyayin, joy is wine. So the whole month I have to drink." There were even Hasidic groups that would celebrate Purim on the 14th of Adar, celebrate on the 15th of Adar, and celebrate on the 16th and the 17th. Because the Gemara has a Hava Mina. That maybe we can read, maybe we could read the Megillah on the 16th and 17th. The Gemara says, Eimel Shitsa V'Shivsar, maybe the 16th and the 17th. So then the Gemara says, no, the Pasuk says, V'lo Yavor, it can't pass. So it can't be past the 15th. But there was a Havamina of the 16th and 17th, so there are those who say that a Havamina is also something. So they drink on the 16th and 17th too. So I've had the privilege sometimes of spending Purim with Rav Mordechai Zilber, who was, now he's in his 60s, but he's a great expert in Kabbalah and Torah and Hasidus, and his students call him the Stachina Rebbe. So he takes advantage of every possible Purim opportunity. So tomorrow night, starting at 5 o'clock in his shul in Borough Park, it's going to be Purim with all the halachas of Purim. People are going to be totally drunk. They'll be dressed up in costume. There'll be kids going around collecting tzedakah from Matanos Lev Yonim. And they're going to go from 5 till, who knows when, 11, 12, 1 in the morning. Because it's Purim. It's Purim Katan. So that's also a Purim. And then come Purim, there'll be Purim. And then Shushan Purim will be Purim also. So it'll be at least this year, at least 3 days of Purim celebrations. So I'd like to share some things that he shared in Mishdei Ayayin during the drinking of the wine a couple of years ago in the year Tafshin Samaches. That was 2008, in the year 5768. So about Purim Katan. So, you know, he likes to mix together Kabbalah with drush, interpretations. In Kabbalah, there's a big thing called mochin, different levels of mind. So the Kabbalah talks about something called mochin de katnus and mochin de gadlus. There are times when the mind is expanded, and there are times that the mind is constricted. And there's a certain times when you feel like you can do anything, like the sky's the limit. You're on a high, religiously you're excited, you're passionate. So that's, the mind is elevated. It's an expanded mind. And then there are times when nothing's going right and you're frustrated and it's depressing and you just can't even, put one foot in front of the next. And that's called mochan de katnas. That's called a small mind, a constricted mind. And the Kabbalah talks about something called ibur, that there's even less than mochan de katnas. Even less than a small mind is when the baby is inside the mother's womb. So it's not even a mind yet. It's just like the incipient stage. It's just like the very, very beginning, the conception, the level of intellect of conception. And then there's leida. There's a birth. The birth has, we moved from being potential to being actual. It was a difficult transition. There's all the danger of birth. Makashalele, it's such a miracle that the baby can make it out of the womb. And that's already, a step forward. And then you go to a higher level, mochan de katnas, mochan de gadlas. And there's a lot of discussion which name of Hashem refers to what level of intellect, etc. So now, in Hebrew, the added month is called the Chodesh Me'uberes. And this year is called Shnas HaIbur. Now, Ibur literally means pregnancy. So this is the pregnant year. Instead of a normal year having 12 months, this is a pregnant year. It has 13 months. So the added month is this month, the first Adar, because the second Adar has all the qualities of a second Adar. It has Purim, it has the four the four parshios. It has Shushan Purim. So what's the added month? The added month is this month. So this is the added month. This is the pregnancy month. So it's interesting. It's called Chodesh Mu'uberes, the pregnant month. It's called Shana Mu'uberes, the pregnant year. So that means that this is really the Ibur relative to the Leda. This is the pregnancy, and next month is the birth. So in other words, the beginning, the foundation of next month's Purim is now. Now we're in Purim, but where when Purim is pregnant? Purim is the fetus inside of the womb. Next month, we're going to have that baby that was now it's just the pregnancy. Next month, the baby's going to be out. Next month, that which is being, conceived now and being, coming together now at the root stage, next month is going to come fully out. So, that's a very powerful thing. The Gemara says that Mordechai, one of his names was Psachia, the opening of God. And in Masechet Shkalim, there is a mention that Psachia was the person in charge of giving women their birds that they had to bring as karbanos after birth. So Mordechai is connected to this idea of birth, of that which was just a pregnancy or just a fetus, now came out to be a birth. So the Rebbe said, this is really an amazing thing. Purim, the theme of Purim is to defeat Amalek. Because Haman, Agagi, he was from Agag. Agag was the king of Amalek. The Chow left. The whole story of Purim is to come back and finish the job off against Amalek. Here, Shmuel told Shaul, God remembers what Amalek did. Go kill out all of Amalek. Kill out the men, the women, the children. Kill all the animals. Shaul goes, and he doesn't. He kills all the men and the women and the children, but he left the king, Agag, and he left the animals. So the Navi Shmuel comes, and the Navi rebukes him. He says, you didn't listen to Hashem. You listened to people. If you think you're a small person, that if the people want the animals, you should give in to them, but you have to realize you were anointed by Hashem. Hashem made you the king. It's not right. You should have wiped everything out the way Hashem told you. And then Shmuel says, well, come with me in front of the people so that they should know that you're upset with me. And Shmuel says, I'm not going to come with you. Shmuel turns around, and Shaul grabs his coat, and he tears the coat. And Shmuel then says, that's it. Hashem has torn away the kingdom from you. He's going to give it to somebody better than you. And then Shmuel, calls over Agag, and they kill Agag. So that's the whole story that we read in the Haftorah of Parsha Zachar. The Purim story is the fixing of that, because Mordechai is the descendant of Shaul. And what is he doing? He's killing Haman, who's the descendant of Agag. Shaul didn't kill out Agag. He didn't kill out Amalek. And Mordechai is the one who gets Amalek killed. And it all is a fixing. Why didn't Shaul kill Agag? Because of the people. What are the people going to say? The people want the sheep. The people don't want me to kill Agag. If I kill Agag, all the other kings aren't going to be nice to me. There's a certain rules of diplomacy amongst the kings. We have to have a certain, noblesse oblige. You have to be nice to each other. And Mordechai doesn't care about what the people think, right? Everybody else is bowing to Haman. He doesn't bow. And everybody puts pressure on him. He doesn't bow. So Mordechai's the fixing of Shaul's sin, and he's killing Agag. So the whole story of Purim is really the story of wiping out Amalek. And we have this in the Gemara explicitly. The Gemara says that when Esther Hamalka wanted Megillas Esther to be accepted into the canon, so initially the rabbi said, we can't do it, because the verse says, Hinei kasavti lecha shalishin. I've written it for you three times. In other words, that the story of Amalek is written three times. It's written in B'shalach, it's written in Kiseitze, and it's written in Sefer Shmuel. So it's Shalishim and Lerubim. It's written three times, it's not supposed to be four times. So we can't write, Megillas Esther, we can't have a fourth mention of wiping out Amalek. But then they found the verse, that the verse seems to hint to it, because the verse says, Ksov Zos Zikaron Basefer, write this, a memorial in the scroll. Write this is a reference to the Sefer Torah. Right? Atzakisvulachem asashira hazos. Write this song. Zikaron is a reference to the prophets, that's the book of Shmuel, and Basefer in a scroll, that's already a reference to Ksuvim. There is no mention of Amalek in all of Ksuvim, so that's why Megillas Esther has to be accepted as part of Ksuvim. So you see from that Gemara that the Gemara is saying that the story of Megillas Esther is a story really of wiping out Amalek. And I'll get a little bit controversial. You know, nowadays we live in a time where there's a lot of pressure on the part of half of the Jewish population, the women, to play more active roles in the synagogue. So one of the things that people came up with about 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago already, maybe more even, maybe 30 years ago, was let's have a woman read Megillah. Have a woman read Megillah Esther. So that's based on a Gemara. The Gemara says, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, Nashim chayavos b'mikras Megillah. Women are obligated to read the Megillah. Sha'afin ha'yavos sanes, because they were also in the miracle. They were saved the same way the men were saved. They're also obligated to read Megillah. So that's an okay argument if you are a Sfardi. The Rambam says, and the Shulchan Aruch says, that women are obligated the way men are obligated. But Tosfos on that Gemara says women don't read for men. And the Rambam records that. So the Ashkenazim should not have women reading for men, because the Tosfos says women do not read for men. The question is, why don't women read for men? Because they are obligated, they were saved in the miracle the same way the men were. So what's the logic of the Tosfos? He quotes the Bahag and the Ramah, that they think women should not read for men. What's the logic of that? So there was a great rabbi, I think he passed away in the Vilna Ghetto. If not in the Vilna Ghetto, it was right before the Vilna Ghetto. His name was Rabbi Chanoch Henoch Egis. Rabbi Chanoch Henoch Egis, he was one of the judges of the Vilna Beis Din. That was the Beis Din of Rav Chaim Moshe Grudzinski, who was the greatest Torah giant of the generation. And he wrote a book called Marcheshes. He actually was also a religious Zionist. So the Marcheshes, so he has an essay about this Tosfos. So the Marcheshes says an interesting thing. He says, what do we see here in this Gemara? That reading the Megillah is a form of talking about Amalek. There was a whole question, could we include Megillah, not include Megillah? And it went about, the whole discussion is about the psukim about Amalek, whether the story of Amalek is said three times, or it has to be said in the writing, so therefore it could be in the ksuvim. So he said, this was his idea, that there are really two mitzvahs when you read the Megillah. There's one mitzvah when you read the Megillah, which is you're thanking Hashem for the miracle, you're publicizing the miracle. So that applies to men and women equally, because women were saved the same way men were saved. But there's another mitzvah in reading the Megillah, and that mitzvah is destroying Amalek, remembering Amalek. So then he suggested that the mitzvah to remember Amalek is connected to the mitzvah of fighting Amalek. He said, women don't fight, because Rashi tells us, Ein darka shalisha la'asas mulchama. It's not the way of women to wage war. Women are not supposed to be soldiers. Men are supposed to be the soldiers, not the women. So he said, since women are not supposed to be the soldiers, so they're not obligated in the mitzvah of remembering Amalek, so they only have half of what the man has. You know, a woman has the obligation to publicize the miracle, but she doesn't have the obligation to remember Amalek, so therefore she can't read Megillah for men, because men have two obligations, remembering Amalek plus publicizing the miracle. And a woman only has one. So I remember when I read this piece in the Marcheshes, I noticed, you know, we all make a whole big deal that women should hear Parsha Zachar. According to the Marcheshes, there's no need to do so, because he links the idea of remembering Amalek with the idea of fighting Amalek, and then he assumes that since women shouldn't be fighters, they shouldn't be fighting Amalek either, and therefore they wouldn't be obligated in Parsha Zachar too. But that's, anyway, that's an essay that he has. But that's just as an aside. Bottom line is that there is an element, one can even argue, it's sort of the main element of the whole Purim story. It's about wiping out Amalek. It's about the descendant of Shaul correcting the mistake of Shaul and killing Amalek. And that was the big bracha, sort of the blessing. And what Haman did is that if Haman would not have gotten the power that he got, so then all the anti-Semites would not have come out of the woodwork. We wouldn't have known who they are. But since he said all of them should gather and they should, you know, make plans, so we knew who they were. And then when the whole thing switched and Mordechai got the power and the position, so we knew who the anti-Semites were who wanted to kill us. And on that day, we turned around and we killed them and we were able to kill 75,000 Amalekis. So that's the big celebration. The celebration of Purim is the celebration of wiping out Amalek. So if that's the case, there's a very strange aspect to the mitzvah of Amalek. And that is, everything has to be wiped out. Man, woman, child, animals, everything is totally wiped out, which is so strange. Like, why such a devastating, obligation? So we have to say like this, that Amalek represents the root of evil. And when you get to the root of evil, you have to uproot it. You can't just cut the branches and the trunk that grows from evil. When you get to the root of, because if you leave the root, it's going to regrow. When you get to the root, you have to totally uproot it. Maybe we can say, that's why the pasuk says that Bilam said about Amalek, Reishis Gayim Amalek. Amalek is the beginning of all the nations, all the various hatred of the nations, anti-Semitism and persecutions and pogroms. It all began with Amalek, because Amalek is the root of it. So if Amalek is the root, we have to uproot the root from its very, 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 very beginning. And we find this somewhere else too. We find this in regards to Avodah Zarah. The Gemara says that if you come into the land of Israel and you find a tree of Avodah Zarah or an idol of Avodah Zarah, Ha'okar Avodah Zarah, the Gemara says when you uproot Avodah Zarah, Tzarech L'Shari Shachra, you have to then come back and pull out the roots too. It's not enough just to chop down the tree, you have to uproot the roots. When it comes to Avodah Zarah, we understand why, because Avodah Zarah is really the foundation of all the problems. The first evil is the evil of Avodah Zarah. The Aseret Sedirot begins with believing Hashem, your God, and don't have any other gods, because the root of all evil is Avodah Zarah. What did the serpent say? The serpent says, don't listen to God, listen to me. V'yisim k'elohim, you'll be gods. V'yisim k'elohim, yodei tovara, you'll be a God who can decide what's right and what's wrong. That's the root of evil. The root of evil is an Avodah Zarah. So when you get to Avodah Zarah, you're getting to the roots. It's not like other sins. You know, when you get to the sin of don't crossbreed or don't thresh with the ox muzzled. All right, that's a sin. So you don't do the sin. You don't have to uproot it. But when you get to Avodah Zarah is more than just a sin. Avodah Zarah is the root of sin. You have to uproot the Avodah Zarah. When you get to Amalek, it's not just to kill Amalek, not just to stop Amalek. You have to uproot Amalek. Because Amalek is the root of all the evil. Reishis Gayim Amalek. When you get to the roots, you have to uproot the roots of evil. Now we find that the Gemara says that the evil urge is Avodah Zarah. This is a Gemara Masechet Shabbos. The Gemara says, any person who tears his shirt in anger, he's worshipping Avodah Zarah. Why? Because the Gemara says, Ezehu El Zar Sheyesh Begufo Shel Adam. What is the foreign god inside of a person's body? Heveomer Zeyetzer Hara. That's the evil urge. The evil urge is the foreign god inside a person's body. So the urge telling him to tear up the garment and to do the wrong things, that is Avodah Zarah. So the evil urge is called El Zar. He's the foreign god. He's Avodah Zarah. Literally, he's Avodah Zarah within a person. So we have to uproot it. It's not just to cut it down. We have to uproot it from the very roots. Because we have to get rid of Avodah Zarah. That's why Amalek has to be totally uprooted. So in light of this, we can now plug this into many different examples. One of the unique aspects of Purim is that you have 2 days of Purim. You have the 14th of Purim, and you come back for the 15th of Purim. So strange. Why do you have 2 days? Normally you have 1 day of a holiday. Why 2 days of a holiday? Pesach is 1 day of Pesach, and then you have the 7th day of Pesach, and Sukkot is the 1st day of Sukkot, and the last day, Shmini Atzeres, Purim, we have 2 days, the 14th and then the 15th. That's such a question. Why do we have 2 days? You know, Rishonim give different answers. The Ramban says, the reason why we have 2 days, very interesting Ramban, is it's a punishment. Ramban says that the Jews who were in the walled cities, they didn't feel endangered. They said, the Jews who are in the outside cities, they have a problem. But we're in the walled cities, our walls will protect us. So God said, okay, now that you have a holiday, the 14th will be for everybody, and you'll have to go the next day. You'll have only the 15th. And the Ran doesn't like this Ramban. The Ran says, what do you mean? I mean, the Yerushalmi says the reason why we date the walled cities back to the days of Yoshua ben Nun is to give honor to Yerushalayim, that Yerushalayim didn't have a city, didn't have a wall at the days of Achashverosh. If we would date from the days of Achashverosh, Yerushalayim would be embarrassed. But according to you, you're embarrassed if you do have a wall. So therefore, the Ran says he doesn't like the Ramban's pshat, but really the pshat is the reason why there are 2 days. The 14th is because that's when everybody had the miracle of defeating the enemy and resting from that defeat. And the 15th, because that's when the people of Shushan rested. The people of Shushan, then why don't we celebrate, you know, with cities that have a wall from the days of Shushan? That would embarrass Yerushalayim. So we don't want to embarrass Yerushalayim. We celebrate with those in the 15th and those cities that have a wall from the days of Yoshua ben Nun. So these are all answers to this question, which is that it's so strange that you have 2 days, the 14th and the 15th. Normally we all celebrate together. Why are we dividing up the Jewish people? In Yerushalayim it's the 15th, everywhere else it's the 14th. But now we have another answer. Because when you deal with the roots, you can't just cut down the tree. After you cut down the tree, you come back again to take out the roots. So that's why you have 2 days. We have the 14th, and then we come back to take out the roots. We have to really uproot it. Really get rid of every vestige. Pull it all out. So we have the 14th, and then we go back to the 15th. That's why it says about Avodah Zarah, Abeid Te'abdun. As kol ha-makamos asher avdu shama goyim al harim haramim al hagvaos v'sachas kol yitzra hanan. The Torah says, abeid, wipe out, and then again, te'abdun, wipe out again. Because when you get to Avodah Zarah, you get to the root ideology, the worst thing, thinking that there's something other than God, that's the foundation of all the problems. You get there, you have to knock it down, and then uproot it. Abeid te'abdun. And that's when in Purim, we have Purim, and then Shushan Purim, to get rid of the branches, and then to get rid of the roots. So therefore, if Purim is all about getting rid of Amalek, and getting rid of Amalek is attacking the root of evil, which means you knock it down and then you uproot it, so what a lucky year we have. Because we can get drunk tomorrow, which is the Purim of the roots. Right? This is the root Purim. This is the Purim of Adar Rishon. This is the Purim when it's only a root. It's only a pregnancy. It's only a fetus. It's the Chodesh Mu'uberes. It's the month that is the pregnancy. It's the foundation. It's the Shana Mu'uberes. It hasn't been born yet. It hasn't come out yet. It's still the very beginning. So if we have a Purim experience tomorrow, that means at the roots, we're in the root level, and at the root level, we're getting rid of Amalek. At the roots, we're uprooting the root of evil. Oh, it's tremendous. It's more Purim than next month. It's more Purim, because this is the whole idea of Purim is to get rid of the roots of evil. And here it's a time of the roots. And at the time of the roots, we can be celebrating Purim, celebrating getting rid of Amalek. It's a real, real amazing thing. We're getting rid of the roots of evil. We're getting rid of the roots of Amalek. And when you deal with Amalek, you have to get to the very roots. So maybe this explanation of the roots leads us to another, fascinating issue, very difficult issue. The Gemara Masechet Sukkah says something very strange. It says, "Kol ha-gadol mechaveiro, the greater a person is than his friend, yitzro gadol himenu, the greater is his evil urge." If he's a greater person, he has a greater evil urge. That seems so strange. If he's greater, so he's learning more Torah, and the Rambam says the Torah is the antidote to the evil urge, he should have less of an evil urge. What does it mean? He's greater. Because he's greater, he has a bigger evil urge. Well, how does that even make sense? He's learning Torah, he's doing mitzvos. That should weaken the evil urge. How could it be someone who's, 95 years old, and he's a huge, huge Torah scholar, and he's living just for Hashem, and he controls himself and overcomes his urges, all these things, for years and years. He has a bigger evil urge than me, who's not such a good guy. How does that make any sense? Why is that fair? He should have a lesser evil urge. What does it mean? Greater evil urge. So what my Rebbe suggested is like this. The evil urge is there the way we are. Because there's an equilibrium in this world. Zelu mazel selokim. God made this one opposite that one. Or when Rivka goes and she has the difficult pregnancy, so the prophet tells her, Ulaom ilaom yematz. One gets stronger from the other. So there's a parallel world. So a person like myself, I'm not a root person. I'm a branch person. I'm not connecting to the real roots of experience. So the evil urge is on the branches. But a person who's greater, he's a great Talmud Chacham, he's a big tzaddik, he's in the roots of reality. He's not focused on the externals. He's focused on the real reality, on Hashem running the world and being close to Hashem and speaking with Hashem and trusting in Hashem. So he's in the roots. He's in the roots. He has an evil urge attacking the roots. So it's a worse evil urge, because that's a root evil urge. You know, I have an evil urge on my branches, but he has an evil urge on the roots. Oh, but if he has an evil urge at the roots, when he defeats his evil urge, that's amazing. Wow, he's defeating the very roots. He's uprooting the roots. That's the real, real destruction of Amalek. The real destruction of Amalek is to get rid of the very roots of it all. And to say, no, we won, and we're uprooting it from the very root. So to go a little bit deeper, the root of all sins is the sin of Avodah Zarah. And if a person would realize that every sin is a form of Avodah Zarah, he wouldn't do those sins. Atanya wrote his book to explain how we can all overcome our evil urge. That's what he says, Levar b'derech arucha shi'iktzara v'derech k'tzara shi'aruka b'ira pasla kikara v'elecha adavra ma'ob b'ficha v'lvavcha la'asosa, to explain how we can fulfill mitzvahs. So the Tanya makes the following argument. This is the way we can argue with our evil urge to fulfill mitzvahs. He can say, Jews, even those who are very, very far. So if they're very far, they're not listening to their good urge, listening to their evil urge, doing this avera, that avera. If they're faced with a terrible challenge, convert to Avodah Zarah or death, they many times will choose death. And it's not even a hard choice. It's not even a question. Absolutely not. There's absolutely no way I'm going to convert to Avodah Zarah. Absolutely no way. There's a Hasidic work called Toldos Yaakov Yosef. It was the first book of Hasidic thought. So in that book, he relates a story that he heard from a prominent woman. He says, from Isha Chashuva. And Hasidim have a tradition that this story was said by the daughter of the Baal Shem Tov, whose name was Adele. So the daughter of the Baal Shem Tov related to the Toldos Yaakov Yosef. She said, you know, we have a good deal. We have Hashem. That's a good deal. It's good to have Hashem on your side. But Hashem also made a good deal. He has Am Yisrael. And Am Yisrael is a very loyal nation. Why? Shaharei Faivel Ishkal. Because Faivel, the lowly man, Masar Nafsho Mo'odo, he gave his money and his life. Al Kiddush Shmo Yisbah, God's holy name. So what was the story? So the Hasidim have a tradition that there was a thief in that town whose name was Faivel. And that was how he survived. He used to steal. So one day, he went crazy, and he decided to steal from the church. So he broke into the church, and he stole the jewels of the bishop. So when the police chief heard that the jewels of the bishop went missing, he said, oh, well, you know who's the thief? It's Faivel. So they went into Faivel's house, and they found the jewels of the bishop there. So they arrested him. The bishop said, if this Jew will convert to Christianity, we'll forgive him, we'll just take the jewels back. But if he won't convert to Christianity, such a terrible chutzpah that he stole from the church, he has to be burned in a public burning in front of everyone. So they presented Faivel with this choice. And Faivel said, there's no way I'm converting to Christianity. And he was killed. Al Kiddush Hashem. So, you know, the daughter of the Baal Shem Tov's point was, he's not a very religious person. He doesn't think about God. His profession was to steal. He was a thief. He was, you know, God said, don't steal. It's in the Ten Commandments, Lo Tignov. And this guy's stealing all the time. He's not a very religious man. He's an Ishkal. You know, the religion is light for him. He doesn't take it seriously. But even though the religion is not something he took seriously, when he was told, convert to Christianity, no way. No way. I'm not doing that. No way. I'm not doing Avodah Zarah. So the daughter of the Baal Shem Tov said, listen, God got a great nation. It's a nation that's willing to do anything for him. You know, maybe it takes crazy scenarios to remind us that that's who we are, but when we're reminded, we're totally loyal. So the Tanya says, every Jew is like that. We would all be willing to do that. We all are the children of Avram Avinu, the same way Avram Avinu said, throw me into the furnace to Nimrod, I'm not going to accept Avodah Zarah. All Jews are willing to die faced with Avodah Zarah. That's what every Jew is willing to do. So the Tanya says, how do we overcome the Yetzer Hara? To teach ourselves that every sin is a little bit of Avodah Zarah. So if I say Lashon Hara, that's a little bit of Avodah Zarah. It's Avodah Zarah, because God said not to do it, so why am I doing it? It's like some other power who has to be listened to instead of God, Chas V'Shalom. It's Avodah Zarah. It's a form of Avodah Zarah. Whatever the sin is, stealing or, you know, threshing with an ox when it's muzzled. I'm not listening to what God said to do. So why? Because I'm listening to something else. Listening to something else is a form of Avodah Zarah. So one second, I'd be willing to die not to do Avodah Zarah. So why should I listen to this other thing and do this little bit of Avodah Zarah? That's what the Tanya says. We have to keep reminding ourselves we don't want to do Avodah Zarah. So in other words, when you get to realizing that things are Avodah Zarah, then you say, but there's no way I want to do that. Oh, so you get back to God. When you see that the root of a sin is really Avodah Zarah, then you say, there's no way I want to do that. Then you go back to God. You uproot it. When you get to the roots, you uproot. You uproot this sin. When you get to the root of a sin, you say, oh, it's Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah, I don't want to do Avodah Zarah. That's what the Gemara says in Sota. A person only sins because he's insane. In that moment, he's insane, thinking it's not Avodah Zarah. I am godly, I believe in God, I have a relationship with God, but I'm just not listening to what he said. Doesn't add up. Okay, something not adding up is insanity. So we're insane when we do the sin. But really, if we wouldn't be insane, we get to the roots of things, we say, no, I don't want to do Avodah Zarah. So maybe that's the meaning of the following verse. The verse says, Kiraf Eli Israel, as I heal Israel, V'nigla Avon Ephraim, the sin of Ephraim will be revealed. So, I mean, if I'm revealing the sin, it's not healing. But that's the answer. How does God heal us? By revealing to us what a sin really is. By revealing that the sin is really a form of Avodah Zarah that heals us. Because then we don't want to do it. We don't want to do Avodah Zarah. So this maybe is the dynamic of what's going on in Megillas Esther. What does Achashverosh do? Achashverosh first has a party. And by having a party, he invites everyone, including the Jews. And the Jews should never have gone to that party. We should never have gone to that party. The Gemara says, for the sin of going to that party, we deserve to be wiped out. What was that party all about? So according to the Gemara, that party was to celebrate that there was never going to be a Mashiach. Because here, the Navi Yirmiyahu said that the Jews are going to be in exile for 70 years. And everybody knew this, that the Jews are going to be in exile for 70 years, and then we get out. So Belshazzar, he made a whole calculation of what those 70 years are. 45 years of King Nebuchadnezzar, 23 years of his son, Evil Merodach, 2 years of Belshazzar. So in the third year of Belshazzar, he made a big party. He said, if they're not out now, they're never getting out. He took out the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash, and he gets killed that night. There's a coup, and the Persians take over. So Achashverosh figured, okay, where's Belshazzar going wrong? He's counting all 45 years of Nebuchadnezzar. He should count from when Nebuchadnezzar defeated the Jews. So that's 8 years into Nebuchadnezzar's rule. So he said, okay, there were 5 years of Koresh. Now, it's the third year of me. It's the eighth year. The Jews are never getting out. And he made a party to celebrate that the 70 years are up and the Jews haven't been redeemed and therefore they're never going to be redeemed. The whole promise is gone. That's what Achashverosh's party was about. That's what it says, Kesheves HaMelech Achashverosh. Kesheves, the Gemara says, means Nityashva Da'ata. He calmed down. He said, oh, I thought the Jews are going to get out. They're not getting out. The 70 years are up. He calmed down. Nityashva Da'ata. He was at peace. That's what we find that throughout the Megillah, Achashverosh says to Esther, what do you want? Ad Chatzi HaMalchus, up to half the kingdom. Why doesn't he say, whatever you want, I'll give you. Why give a modifier up to half the kingdom? So the Gemara says, V'lo davar shechotzis l'malchus, but not that which would divide the kingdom. In other words, not to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, not to let the Jews go back, that I won't let you. Anything else I would allow, but not to let the Jews go back, not to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. So Achashverosh was very against the Jews going back and getting to build the Beis HaMikdash. And the Jews went to his party. The It's terrible. But we say that we don't believe in the Beis HaMikdash. We believe in his nonsense. It's a terrible thing. So basically what it is that it, at its root is a lack of faith in God. And the way that lack of faith expressed itself was to give up on Mashiach. To give up on getting out. We're never getting out. We're here forever. To give up on Mashiach, to give up on the promises that Hashem gave us, that's really a lack of faith. Because when we believe in Hashem, we have to believe in all 13 of the basic principles of faith. Hashem exists, he's not physical, the Torah's forever, and also that Mashiach's going to come, can come any day, the dead are going to come back to life. That's also part of faith, to believe, chas v'shalom, to not have those beliefs, that's a terrible thing. We have to have a full and total belief. So basically, the people who went to the party of Achashverosh, the root of their sin is a sin of lack of faith. They don't believe in all the promises that Hashem gave. So what's the answer? How did we merit to be saved, though? We acted as if we didn't believe. But deep down, we really did believe. That's what the Gemara says. Heim lo asu elu lefanim. They were only living on an external level. Yeah, they're going through the motions of being at a party, but they didn't really believe in it. They weren't internal people. So what did Hashem do? Hashem wants to save the Jews. So Hashem made Achashverosh elevate Haman. So when Achashverosh elevated Haman, so then the Jews said, one second, we have nothing to do with this guy. This is what? Avodah Zarah. When it comes to Avodah Zarah, the Jews say, we're not interested. Even the lowly Jews are not interested. So now there's no claim. What was the claim? You don't believe. If we don't believe, why are we rejecting Haman? We reject Haman. We do believe. We have total faith in Hashem. Oh, we ate at the party. That was just in the externals. That wasn't our roots. Our roots weren't willing to be part of that party. Again, V'nigla kirafi li Yisrael, when I want to heal Israel, V'nigla avon Ephraim, I reveal the sin of Ephraim. When the sin is revealed, namely, what's the root of the sin? The root of the sin is Avodah Zarah. Haman is an Avodah Zarah. That's rafi li Yisrael. That's the way I heal Israel. Because then the Jews reject the Avodah Zarah. And the Jews are believers. And they're not giving up on redemption. And whatever they enjoyed from the party, that was just the externals. But they are living really with a connection. And that's what Purim is all about. We have to go to the roots. When we go to the roots of things, we realize we are loyal to Hashem. We're not with the Avodah Zarah. That heals us. And that uproots the root of Amalek. Totally, totally uprooting Amalek. So Purim Katan is an amazing thing. Because Purim Katan is Shana Mu'uberes. It's the pregnant year. Right now, we have Purim on a root level. Because now is the 14th of Adar Rishon. This is the roots of what will be Adar Sheni. In Adar Sheni, it's already later a little bit. It's not as root level. Now, then it's already born. Now, we find in Halacha that with Jews, there's a difference between pregnancy and birth. We find, for example, the halacha is that if a woman's, you know, pregnancy is endangering her life, the Mishnah says that we can go in to save her life by killing the child. So Rashi asks why. Rashi says in the Masechet Sanhedrin, because the pregnancy is lav nefeshu, it's not yet a child. It's not a soul yet, it's just the potential of a soul. It's not yet a soul. But the Gemara says that non-Jews are different. The Gemara says that if a non-Jew kills a fetus, it's murder. A non-Jew kills a fetus, it's already a murder. So it sounds like this. When a child is inside a mother, it's a big kedusha, a big holiness, the holiness of a Jew. So there's a lot of challenges against holiness. It's not easy to come out. That's why we find that there's a tradition, a skula, to help a woman have an easy childbirth is to say the chapter of Tehillim, Lam Natseach Yancha Hashem B'Yom Tzara, that Hashem should answer in a day of difficulty 70 times. Because Because that chapter of Tehillim has 70 words. There's a tradition that a woman has 70 pains in her childbirth. So by saying that chapter of Tehillim 70 times, she will neutralize those 70 pains. Now, 70 always reminds us of the 70 nations. In the end of Parshas Noach, the descendants of Noach. The 70 nations, they're trying to prevent the holiness of the Jews to come out into the world. The nations of the world, though, there isn't such great holiness when they're out, and there wasn't such great holiness when the fetus is inside. Therefore, there's no difference there between the fetus and the child. The fetus has a life, and the child has a life, because they don't have this whole difference. And therefore, the halacha says that with the level that it is with the child, that's the way it is with the fetus. Maybe that's the verse in Tehillim, "Ulitzion ye'amer," and to Zion it will be said, "Ish v'ish yulad ba," a man and man will be born in it. In Zion, amongst the Jews, the birth is a challenge. So that's a big deal when it comes out into the world. As I mentioned earlier, Psachya is one of the names of Mordechai. The one who opens up. The one who opens up the womb and stops the 70 voices that are preventing the child from coming out. The one who causes a holy birth. So Purim is when all the challenges of birth are sweetened. There's something else that has to be born in this world, and that's Mashiach. And the difficulties for Mashiach to come into the world are called Chevle Mashiach. So Purim is the time when birth happens more easily. It's a time when Mashiach happens more easily. So now we can have the following idea. If there's no challenge in birth, then that means to some degree we have the same status as the non-Jews. Because the non-Jews, the fetus, has the same level as the born. So if we're saying that there's not going to be any challenge of the fetus going out to being born, so now already the fetus and the born are the same. In a certain way, it's like the non-Jews. So if that's the case, we can say that in Purim, the fetus is already considered born. Because we know that Mordechai is here to stop all the challenges in the face of the birth. So in Purim, the fetus is already born. So again, we're in Purim Katan. Purim Katan is the fetus. It's the Chodesh Mu'uberes. But on Purim, the fetus is already born because we have Mordechai, who's Psachya, who's getting rid of all the challenges stopping the birth. So that means in Purim Katan, it's already Purim Sheni. It's already the Purim of Adar Sheni. And therefore, the same way the Bnei Noach, the non-Jews, the fetus is already almost like born, we also have the status as if we're already born. Now, the Kabbalists say that if you really want to get holiness, you first have to go through Mochen de Katnas, and then you go through Mochen de Gatlas. First, you have to serve God when you're not inspired, and it's frustrating, and just keep going. And then God will give you a gift of, you'll understand it, it'll all be special. The halacha is that when Mashiach will come, we're not going to accept any more converts. Because we're not going to be confident that they're that sincere. Now, everyone's going to want to be part of it. It'll be too late. If you want to join us now when it's not so pleasant, absolutely, everybody's welcome. But when it's going to be pleasant to be a Jew, then, you know what, maybe it's not so sincere. That's too late. So we can say like this. In Adar Sheni, when you already have the full revelation of Purim, to be excited about Purim, that's not a big deal. It's like when Mashiach already came. But in Adar Rishon, when it's only the time when we're still inside the womb, when we're still, in the beginnings, it's the Mochen de Katnus, it's when it's not so inspired, and you want to be attached to Purim, ooh, that means you're really connected. Then you'll be connected even when there's the birth as well, and you're really, really attached, and you're really connected to what Purim is. So we can say like this, the Jewish people as a whole are all excited next month. But the people who really care about Purim, they're already excited this month. They're excited that they have the beginnings of Purim, that they have the ability to uproot the roots of evil by celebrating the roots of Purim. And by celebrating the roots of Purim, then they know that they have established for themselves the Mochan, the Godless, the big Purim that's coming, the big, big celebration next month, Bezrat Hashem. They're opening up the door, hopefully, for the light of Mashiach, which is a light that comes to us during Purim. So that's one idea that he said, that really, the real celebration of Purim is this Purim, the Purim of the first month. He said another idea, that we know that when Mashiach will come, it's not going to be the time anymore of doing mitzvos. Then it's going to be the time of getting reward for the mitzvos. So hayom la'asosam, now is our job to do. U'lamachar la'kabel scharm, in the future, then we're going to get the reward. But we find in the Gemara an interesting thing. The Gemara says that the nations of the world are going to come and they're going to complain. They're going to say, we want reward. Hashem's going to say, you can't get reward because it's too late. They say, no, he never gave us the Torah. He never gave us a chance. Give us a chance. Give us a mitzvah. This is the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. So Hashem's going to say, okay, I'll give you an easy mitzvah. Sukkah. So I'll give them a sukkah, and then he'll take out a really hot sun. They'll sit in the sukkah, it'll be uncomfortable, they'll walk out and they'll kick the sukkah, and that's it, no more complaints. The Gemara says, 1 second, but if it's really hot, you're a mitzvah, you're in pain, you don't have to be in the sukkah. The Gemara says, yeah, but there was no excuse to kick it. You know, why'd they have to kick it on their way out? So the fact that they kick it on their way out, they don't have any room for any complaints. So it's a strange thing, like why of all mitzvahs the mitzvah of sukkah? So my rabbi suggested like this. He said, you know, sukkah is the time of joy. Zman simchaseinu, the time of our joy. The Gemara says, Adayin lo samach HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'olama. God's not happy with his world. God says about the future, Yismachu HaShamayim v'sagal ha'aretz. The heavens will be happy. The earth will rejoice. But right now he's not happy. So how could sukkah be zman simchaseinu? Apparently the sukkah is amazing. It takes us from this world into the next world. It takes us into the next world. It could be Zman Simchaseinu, the time of our joy. So when we're in the next world, it's not a time to do mitzvos. The nations of the world say, we want to do mitzvos. Hashem says, okay, I have something which can take you from one world to the next. Go into the sukkah. When you go into the sukkah, you can go from the world of not doing mitzvos back into the world of doing mitzvos. He takes them back into the realm of Ayom La'asosim, of doing mitzvos. It was a world of L'machar L'kabel Scharam, tomorrow to get their reward. You know what? You can go back to the world of Hayom Lasos. But anyway, they don't want to do it. They reject doing the mitzvos. So he suggested that maybe this type of a dynamic to mix the Lamachar L'Kabel Scharam together with the Hayom Lasosam, today to do them, that's what we have on Purim. Because on Purim we get drunk. So when you get drunk, you can't do anything. It's just getting the reward. But on the other hand, when you're getting drunk, it's really that you're giving away your mind. You're giving the biggest thing away. You're giving away your mind to Hashem. The biggest thing we have is our mind. We're giving that away to Hashem. So Purim is on the one hand doing for Hashem, l'mach etayom lasos, I'm giving away our mind. On the other hand, at the same time, it's to get the reward of the joys, of the delights. So Purim also is like Sukkot. It's the combination of the future world, of tomorrow to get the reward, with today in order to do. And that's especially true Purim Katan. It's Purim Katan, you don't even have the halachos of Purim. So it's really all about a day of doing. It's a day of Hayom La'asosam, of doing the mitzvos. Yet at the same time, there is an idea to celebrate as if it's Purim. To have a little bit of the future world of L'machar L'Kabel Scharam, of tomorrow to get the reward. Of not doing, but just to be getting the reward. To be drunk and to be enjoying the reward. Not to be doing any mitzvos. You can't do any mitzvos when you're drunk. So Purim is an amazing time of combining Hayom La'asosam with L'machar L'Kabel Scharam. It's a time to taste a little bit of the ultimate future, the light of Mashiach. So especially this year, we merit to have three Purims. Purim Katan, Yudalet Adar, Tesvav Adar. Time for a lot of celebration. Thank you.